inside the off stump. Oh, he's caught it! I don't believe it! Tom Coler-Cadmore has caught the most magnificent catch. That short third man is the end of Daniel Sams, and Somerset have won the Vitality Blast 2023. They've bowled Essex out for 131.
Hello there, you're listening to Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. This is the Somerset Cricket Podcast. My name is Ian Shepherd, and joining me this evening, I've got lifelong Somerset fan Steve Tancock, digital guru for Somerset CCC Ben Warren, and the voice of cricket on BBC Radio Somerset, Anthony Gibson. So we start at home against Notts on Friday, but shall we have a little chat about that? It's a pretty boring game at the Oval, wasn't it? Not much happened. I think Lamonby got a few runs, Renshaw got a few runs, and Surrey finished about, you know, 5 wickets down. About, were they 60 short on the run chase? See you next week. I mean, we could do till midnight on this game. Shall we start with the positives? We'll talk about Tom Lamonby, and I put out a tweet at lunchtime on the first day, which is, so I'm kind of blaming myself for the collapse because I was tempting fate massively. But I don't think, from what I saw, I don't think I was exaggerating when I said he was batting like a god. I've never seen him time the ball so well. He looked to be playing the ball a lot later than he was last season, which I think may have contributed to his normal mode of dismissal of poking off and snicking behind, just playing it a little bit early. But he was just playing those punchy off drives. He was whipping the ball away through square leg. I mean, Gibbo, you will have seen more of him than anybody else, apart from maybe Ben, but you ever seen him bat better? I don't think I have.
Well, he was pretty good at Canterbury as well, you know. And arguably, it was more difficult to time the ball at Canterbury. It was a better pitch at the Oval. But he batted absolutely brilliantly. It was just a shame the way the innings came to an end. And, you know, he was obviously so disconcerted, it, you know, did for his concentration. Just after I said, he's going on to his 600, I think, for Somerset, isn't it? And let's hope that the previous highest was 116 or whatever. And let's hope this time he can really build on it. Of course, he was out next ball. But he's batting really, really well. And bear in mind, I mean, he was in the first over as well, or second over, mm-hmm. second over. So he might just as well have been opening. And, you know, even with the Kookaburra ball on a pretty placid pitch, the Surrey attack is a strong one. And, you know, he just batted beautifully. He timed it well. He hit some lovely, lovely shots. It was the best 2 hours of the entire game. I mean, to compare his century with Sibley's, champagne versus homemade wine. To see him getting runs, and I hope it continues. He's a pleasure to watch.
Steve, were you able to have much of a look on?
Yeah, I probably didn't do as much work as I should have done.
No, me neither.
It was just so elegant and so silky. And what I liked was that he didn't, from ball one almost, he seemed to be in control and have the belief that he could score the runs. You know, it wasn't like a scratchy first 20, was it? He was up and running straight away.
Well, he took, was it 18, 19 balls to get off the mark? And then after that, he was scoring at, you know, over a run a ball without looking like he was pushing on to score over a run a ball.
Yeah, but he wasn't playing and missing. Mm. You know, he was just picking up the pace of the pitch. He looked confident. He looked in control. I think he really enjoys batting with Matt Renshaw. Actually, I think that the Renshaw presence is part of the explanation for his form, because Renshaw, you know, he's a he's a bit of a one off, but he and Lamonby really seem to hit it off well.
Yeah, they did bat well against Warwickshire a couple of seasons ago. I think maybe the first or second game they opened together. I think they put on quite a big first wicket partnership. Ben, did you make it up to the Oval this week, or were you busy wandering around with wires and stuff to get all the gear ready for Friday?
No, I wasn't at the Oval, unfortunately. Lots of projects going on.
I'll just say, we've probably got like you weren't at the Oval, I wasn't at the Oval, Steve wasn't at the Oval, or we've benched Harry and Dan who were at the Oval, so you can blame me for a terrible schedule this week, but sorry about that, listener, but yeah, bad, sorry for interrupting, carry on.
But no, I was at Canterbury, so certainly saw a lot of Tom Allenby at Canterbury, and yeah, just echoing Anthony's comments around his timing, he seems very assured in defence, you know, he looks confident when I think certainly he is playing, his defensive game looks in a much stronger place than what it has been. Maybe that's a little bit to do with the Kookaburra ball, but I think even in pre-season he looked good against the Students, so yeah, it's great. It's really great to see, actually. He's such a beautiful timer of the ball when he's in full flow. And it's certainly a really great start to the season. And I think that he will have ambitions of recreating that sort of hype around him that was sort of popped on his shoulders in 2020.
Yeah, he never. Yeah, 2020. We had 2021, 2022, and 2023, and he seemed to be Mr. September for a while, didn't he? He would always seem to score 100,
yeah,
100 or two in September. But as you say, he's hit the ground running. You could possibly say it has got something to do, maybe, with the Kookaburra ball helping, but the Kookaburra ball doesn't alter your technique to make you play that ball a little bit later. The Kookaburra ball doesn't help you time the ball as well as it was. If you see what I mean, the Kookaburra ball doesn't make your technique look as good as it made Lambs's technique look. And
I'd like to think it's all the work he's done over the winter, because he's clearly gone away. He said he'd worked on the mental side of the game to Anthony pre-season, but to me he looks like he's sort of grooved the shots and the shots that we know he can play and look so lovely, and that are the bulk of his run gathering. He seems to be playing those exceptionally well, doesn't he? And you know, it will have hurt him the last couple of seasons. I suspect him not playing in the last side a lot probably hurt him as well. Mm-hmm. So it's great when you see the motivation being turned into a positive like that. And you know, I'm so happy for him, and he's just, you know, Ben said about, you know, pushing on and that and whatever. What we want to see is him being talked about as, you know, on the fringe of the England discussion now, because that means he'll have got big runs in this block of games, which is going to benefit us. You know, it's and I suspect it's one of those horrible things with cricket, isn't it? He got 100, and as you said, you know, Anthony, he got 100 and then was out, and probably by the time he got into his training gear and sitting in the dressing room, half the team were back in there with him, and he was probably thinking, oh, that's my fault, because if I'd have just batted through the next half an hour, because that's where it is, that's often the psychology in our sport. So you know, hopefully it'll motivate him even more. But
that's why I didn't interview him at close of play, because I thought he'd probably be, you know, down on himself. So
he got 100 against, was it Kent, you told him he'd had a crap season, Gibbo. So Lord knows what you'd have said to him after he'd run out the overseas.
Well, honestly, it wasn't a very good season last year.
Oh, it was. He was averaging 30-odd, Gibbo.
But anyway, I reckon he'd be the first to say it.
Yeah, exactly. So I interviewed Shane so that Shane could say how well he'd play, and he did. So that was fine, but it was, well, you know, less said about the collapse the better.
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about it. I mean, the cardinal rule in club cricket is you never don't run out the overseas, so I presume that was permeated up the up the ladder to county cricket. Would he have taken that run if it was the run that takes him from 34 to 35? Probably not.
Yeah, well, there was a run there. But Renshaw was ball watching. I think it was six of one and half a dozen of the other. I don't think it was Lammerby's fault.
Yeah, it was just one of those.
I don't think it was entirely Renshaw's fault, you know. And as I think you tweeted, Ships, you know, the old saying, yeah, don't run on the misfield.
Don't run on a misfield. And then of course just that kind of haze and All the noise about, you know, the run out and getting to 100. He was LBW to, was it Clark? The very next ball after getting 100. Playing a shot which he didn't look like he would have even entertained playing for the previous couple of hours. So it was... But thankfully, we carried on unfettered progress to 450 from... Oh, no, wait. No, we lost 7 for 20. Has James Rue ever played a worse shot than that? And is that Mr. McCullum and Mr. Stokes telling him to play more attacking cricket?
Or... He's been very skittish. He was very skittish. And at Canterbury, I mean, he got some runs, but he was hitting in the air and all sorts of strange things. So I don't know, but I think he just needs to calm down and you know, go back to the James Rue that we saw last season. We need some real solidity there in the middle order.
Yeah, the James Rue, who as we exclusively revealed on this podcast, is statistically better than Sachin Tendulkar at 20. So I would remind Mr. McCullum and Mr. Stokes of that if they have gotten his ear on that Lions training camp, because he's 19 years old last year, and he's got a method that has got him 1,500 runs or whatever it was, an average of nearly 60. So quite clearly, the lad can play. So why anyone would be getting in his ear telling him to up his strike rate or dominate or whatever? I mean, this might all just be complete conjecture, and it might never have happened. So we'll never know. But another player who had a pretty decent game was Casey Aldridge. Bernie, and you'll have seen a lot of Casey coming up. I felt this was like a coming of age performance for Casey. Really solid 50 in the second innings, 8 wickets in the match with the Kookaburra ball, which we will get onto later. I think Twitter has crashed with the amount of questions we've had about the Kookaburra versus the Duke's ball and Robert Key's comments. But Ben, Casey Aldridge finally announced himself.
Yeah, it was again, he was very good at Canterbury as well. I think it's worth adding, but certainly looks to have put on a yard of pace. I think he looks, you know, he almost, given the other alternatives in our attack, he probably looks the quickest Somerset bowler at the moment, which is he's not absolutely express pace, but certainly appears to have put on a bit of pace. Certainly looks to have be pitching up a little bit, but when he's bowling short, he's doing it with purpose and not kind of just back of a length. His batting came on a lot last year, and it appears to have developed even further. I know we'll probably come on to talk about Rob Key, but it was interesting that Rob Key made a point about Casey in his piece the other day, and I think that, you know, his experience that he had with the Lions, he didn't get a lot of game time, but it would have given him a lot of confidence. I think he's sort of acting like a regular first team player now for Somerset. I think he's always been a youngster, and I think this will probably be the year where he'll look back on it, and this is where he's a fully fledged first team performer.
He's not turning up at the ground on Friday morning, maybe 50-50 if he's in the team now. He's turning up fully expecting to be in that 11, which I think is a great thing for a player.
He got injured last season at the end of, and Somerset really missed him, you know, and I think that you know, the kind of particularly during the One Day Cup, actually, I think that he would have been a really useful player to have in the One Day Cup, and hopefully he'll be available this year for us. But great to see. I know that he's getting a lot of praise around the circuit at the moment. The Surrey commentary team on the stream repeatedly talked about an interview that they'd done with Keaton Jennings, who was...
Well, I only listened to the Surrey commentary for the 2 hours that BBC Radio London was down, Gibbo, you'd be pleased to know. And I don't know what game Ben was playing, but yeah.
I really think that this could be a really breakthrough year for him after kind of a really, really positive one last year too. And the club have always had a huge hope and aspiration for him, and I think he's now starting to really deliver the numbers that put him in that top all-rounder category.
Yeah, Absolutely, Steve. I mean, Gibbo, are you there? Have you frozen or have you fallen asleep? No, Gibbo's frozen. Either that or his Madame Tussauds waxwork has been wheeled into place. So hopefully Gibbo will be back soon. Steve, I mean, yeah, we sit and we effuse almost weekly about Somerset's young bowlers, well, all their young talent really, but it's great to see one of them after, you know, a season and a half of being around there to then really just stamp their mark on a game.
Yeah, I think I'd say agree totally with what Ben said. I'd actually go a bit further in that I think now he's beginning to see that he's got a pivotal role in the side. He's not, you know, somebody who's there as the fourth. I know he's been fourth seamer, but on that cameo performance with the ball on Monday evening, to me, said it all. You know, he came on in a position which was a bit pressured and a bit stressy and bowled pretty well. And the one criticism we had going to the first innings bowling performance, I mean, was that he would, you know, typically go at 4.5 and over. So although he was taking wickets, it was, I think it's quite difficult for Tom Abel last season always to bring him on to bowl situationally. And now he came on and he bowled 20-odd overs at barely three, I think it was. So he's got control, that extra yard of pace. And I think he really feels he belongs. So the next thing is, as you guys have said, he's got to kick on. But, if this Casey Aldridge performs like this all season, that's a huge fill-up. When I was doing the blog, I said, I've always seen him as like the heir apparent to Craig. You know, big strapping fast bowler leading the attack who can contribute and biff some runs down the order and fields like a dream. And now I'm thinking, is he Craig and Lewis rolled into one? Because he certainly, you know, you wouldn't argue about him batting above Lewis in the order and as well. So, you know, that's a heck of a talent we've got there. And I'm not going to start labelling him, comparing with Somerset all-rounders I've seen in my lifetime. But, you know, if he has a season and carries on, he's going to be in that conversation. And it's great. Dan Whiting, who was co-commentating with Anthony, Ben, was saying, and Dan does County Cricket Matters, and I think he did Gloucestershire's commentary last year. He's been around the circuit a lot, and I think he's got a bit of Middlesex leaning as well. And he was saying to Anthony about how on the circuit there's so much envy of our young talent coming through. And they were talking about Thomas Rue and the Thomases and Alfie, you know, and Ned wasn't playing, and Sonny Baker as well. And it's like, wow, you know, you start looking at this, and you know, the future is very optimistic. And I think we all said before the season started, oh, it's going to be a really tough start to the season. And I know we haven't won a game yet, but we've certainly come out with two strong draws. And when you lose a session like we did on Friday afternoon, and where were we early Saturday lunchtime? They were over halfway to our first innings total and hadn't lost a wicket. To then come back into that game so well, control, put the champions under pressure. And okay, we gave them a glimpse at the end, but I think Surrey will know they've been in a game and will think they're going to have a lot easier games than that this season. And it bodes very well. But now we've got the battle of the two 20 for seveners, because Notts went 20 for seven on Monday, I think it was, as well. So that'll be interesting.
Bottom of the table Notts.
Yeah, I know. by like 2 points from fourth or something, though, isn't it?
For reference, this is Casey's first innings figures: 24 overs, 2 maidens, 5 for 64. So 2.6 runs per over, Steve, which, as you said, is light years of an improvement from where he was at spells going sort of 4.5 and over. And as you said, Abe's wasn't particularly able to. Gibbo is back. You may have heard the bing bong. He also needs to put 50p in the internet box over there in Langport.
He's nipped round to Eli's to piggyback off their Wi-Fi.
I think that the game against Surrey, though, is the type of game that will give Somerset huge confidence. You know, sometimes games you get points, sometimes you get more than you deserve, sometimes you get less. But I think that this is one of those games which was worth more than the points tally suggested. Yes. I think that, you know, particularly the bowlers, you know, to go to on a flat pitch with a Kookaburra ball, and yes, Surrey got over 400, but the way that they didn't let them escape and they kept control, you know, Saturday afternoon was tough. You know, it was really tough cricket on a turgid flat pitch with a Kookaburra ball, and not once did they let any sense of control get away from them.
Just
and
looking
I think
at the Surrey strike rates, actually, Ben, just to back up your point there, and the highest was Jamie Smith, who was going at 66.2 runs per 100 balls. So if you think with their batting lineup on a decent deck with, as you say, with the Kookaburra, and particularly with their lower order hitters as well. I mean, Jamie, we all know he can hit a big ball. He was only striking at 66 as well. So
Burns and Sibley were flying early on. I think they got 50 in the first half hour on Saturday. I didn't make a note of it, but I'm pretty certain that was. And then it was like, wow, they are going to be out of sight by mid-afternoon. At this, it was, you know, we joke about Sibley, but for Sibley to be scoring quickly, and Burns, neither of them are dashers particularly, are they? And, you know, great, absolutely great. That's, as Ben says, that's what forges confidence. And it, you know, the next time you're in that situation, because you will be at some point, they've got that muscle memory now to go back to. And I think it'll stand them in very good stead.
Also, what not to do as well. So I suspect when Tom Lambie's on 99 approaching tea on Friday, he might want to think, well, I just might look for a slightly bigger gap before I come hurtling down.
Matt Renshaw would just be at the other end, not 120,
not going,
no.
But I think that afternoon, Saturday afternoon session, that was where they really started to claw back, and that was I think where ultimately the game started to sort of go back into Somerset's favour, in terms of they had a chance of securing a draw. If Surrey had gone at fives, and they've got the ability to even go at sixes plus it when they were 100 for 100 and plenty for one. So, you know, that was the start of the fight back, and whilst it was an attritional fight back, it sort of started on day two and went all the way through to the end of day four. They showed that fight and character for a long period of time to get into that. I really think that it will have a big positive psychological impact in going into these next couple of games. That you know, we bring the Duke's ball back, and there'll be lots of opportunities for us to sort of really stamp that authority. But like we've said, try and get ahead of the game early. You know, Somerset have got a history the last couple of years of being behind the curve and on the fight back, whereas, you know, they'll be desperate now to get ahead of the game early, and then who knows what can happen.
Yeah.
The other thing, Ben, is I always do, and this is one of my coping strategies when my dad, God bless him, was still alive, and I would always flip it and say, if we had been 160 odd for none, having bowled them out for 285, and we'd drawn the game, you'd be livid, you know, and you can imagine the reaction to that. So I always try and do that, and that to me just shows what a quality performance is. And it, as you said, it was what, two, arguably we won the last seven of the last eight sessions of the game. Yeah, against the champions, much as it sticks in the crawl to say, well, the champions, we've been talking about that lot, but against the champions on their own ground, that's a massive performance, and it's real, really positive. And of course, we've got to follow up this week, and wouldn't it be nice to get a win, etc., etc. But, you know, all these people have been the doom and gloom mongers, and I've always been sort of mid-table sort of views. But string a couple more performances like that, especially as we're going to go to Kidderminster in a couple of weeks' time as well. You know, get a result out of Notts and Worcestershire, and all of a sudden think, whoa, this is transformational, not just very encouraging. So, you know, we do enough gloom. Let's do some cheer and some optimism.
Yeah, I mean,
and then you see what the twos are doing at the moment, and the performance is there as well. And you think,
well, we'll come on to the twos in a minute. I mean, they've got up to Headingley with what looks like four specialist batsmen, which seems quite odd, but it is quite nice after two games to still be in the hunt. As previous years we seem to have lost the first two games and, you know, suffered in a awful injury crisis and blokes being unavailable, massively out of form. But yeah, we're there, we've competed, we made a complete cock up of things at the Oval, but dug ourselves out of the hole quite, I'd say comfortably, it wasn't quite comfortably in the end, but all good. Shoaib Bashir's seasonal debut, I just wanted to touch a bit on him. So what do you want? 36 overs, 11 maidens, 1 for 76 in the first innings, didn't bowl it in the second. I didn't see much at all of him bowl. I was out and about doing stuff sort of Saturday, Sunday. I was only able to catch up with the highlights, and you don't really get the thing. No. How did he go? Because looking at the stats of Cameron Steele and Dan Lawrence, and God knows Dan Lawrence looks like a bloody prisoner in an electric chair when he's bowling. But anyway, we'll leave that as unsaid, even though I did just say it. Yeah, how do we feel that Bash went?
Yeah, I thought he bowled with a lot of control. Again, I think it comes back to that point that you know, had they taken him for fours or fives and over, that would have played a big role in Surrey getting a huge lead much more quickly, of course. So, yeah, I think that he's obviously a very different type of bowler to Cam Steele. That pitch probably did suit a leg spinner, a wrist spinner, more than it did a finger spinner. And Dan Lawrence, you know, I think that the type of bowler he was pretty perfect for the situation Surrey found themselves in. So I wouldn't say that the fact that he only took one wicket and the other Surrey bowlers took how many, eight or so between them, I can't remember now, but I wouldn't say that had any sort of impact on how well Shoaib bowled. I thought he was really excellent through that afternoon session on day two in particular. And his accuracy was good. You know, he looked confident out there. So yeah, I think, you know, ticking the box. It's another, you know, he's bowling at some good players, and they treated him like an international bowler. I think
part of the point though, that when you have this guy who now has a massively enhanced reputation and deservedly so after how well he bowled in India, that, you know, sides are going to treat him with a little bit more respect than certainly they would have done this time last year.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I didn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of coming down the pitch and trying to put pressure back onto him. You know, partly due to the situation. I think Surrey were always planning to build a big lead, and they didn't want to throw wickets away. But also partly due to how well he bowled. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see whether he plays at Taunton on Friday. I would have thought he would. They'll obviously be with a Duke's ball, there'll be other bowlers that would come back into the equation.
But there's the intangible as well, Ben, which is that I think he allowed Casey to do what he did, and the others as well. Because when you've got, and we said this last week about, that's the one thing that Lewis Gregory didn't have at Canterbury, when, you know, we could have probably done with him, even though the conditions didn't necessarily suit. And that allowed us, we've been talking about how well we controlled the situation. But Bash doing what he did and allowing the other bowlers to rotate around him was, I think, a big part of that. So, you know, and there's something Leachie's done for years, isn't it? We've seen him so often just do that, you know, just basically stop up and end, tighten the first innings, take wickets in the second innings. I mean, obviously, our second innings here wasn't a situation for him. But no, very encouraging. And you can just see in his body language, his confidence is right up there, as it should be, with England cap under his belt, you know.
Well, and let's not forget, Jack Leach is now a specialist opener, so
Well, he is for England when he plays, isn't he? Because, you know,
he did bowl in the Yorkshire innings for the twos up at Headingley, and he opened the batting, so much specialist bat these days. Gibbo, were just having a quick chat about Bashir. I'd like to get your thoughts. Obviously, you saw a lot of him. Didn't pick up a bag full of wickets, but the general consensus is that he bowled very, very well and kept the pressure on.
Yeah, he gave Lewis Gregory control. You know, he stopped up one end, as Ben said. He bowled really, really well and allowed the seamers to rotate at the other end. I thought Surrey were a bit limp. I think if I'd been Dom Sibley or whatever, I'd have gone after Bashir a bit more.
I think Surrey could have won that game if they'd gone harder in their first innings, because the ball really wasn't doing anything very much. And I said on commentary, you know, if that had been an Australian side, they'd have gone pretty hard at him. But, you know, he's a much better bowler than he was last year. He's got confidence. His skill level has improved. And I'd be amazed and appalled if he isn't selected for the game against Nottinghamshire. He jolly well deserves it. And I think it's important that Somerset show faith and trust in Shoaib Bashir for his own confidence.
This is
interesting. We haven't talked about the ball yet, but the Kookaburra ball does help the spin bowlers. There's no doubt about it at all. And he bowled well with it.
He did indeed. I don't expect the mistake that was made down at Canterbury, leaving him out, to be made again this season. The recent game against Surrey marked the debut of Miguel Pretorius. Now, which swear words did the children next door to you learn when he played that shot? A shot that, if anyone see me play cricket, they would know that even I would potentially be ashamed of that shot to try and smash Cameron Steele into the Thames, only to see it go straight up in the air and be pouched by Dom Sibley when we were probably 2 overs and 15 minutes away-ish from making the game mathematically secure. Ben, I know Behind the Wyvern is no longer with us, but if there was ever a moment where you wanted Ollie Sale in the dressing room with his camcorder, it would have been Miguel Pretorius's march back in on debut to...
I think we all know, having all been in dressing rooms, exactly what the reception would have been in the dressing room at that point.
I mean,
I'm not sure in modern dressing rooms they think like that anymore. I think they sort of go out and say, play your natural game. But I think even in this instance, I think if you look at the footage back, you'll see Craig, if you look at Craig Overton closely, that will tell you all you probably need to know in terms of what Craig thought of it. Not great. I thought your tweet was pretty spot on in terms of not the best way to endeavour yourself.
I think if I'd have been in charge and we'd have lost that game, he would have just been on an Uber to Heathrow. Wouldn't have subjected him to.
It wasn't the only shot that he played like that though. Every ball he faced.
I know. Well, I've written down the seven balls that he faced. Ball one from Cameron Steele was a drive that the bottom hand came into play and he kind of thick inside edged it. The second ball was a wide that he could have left and he tried to slap it through cover. Third ball was a bouncer from Atkinson that he ducked. Fourth ball, he dropped one into the offside from Atkinson and he got a single. And then he's facing Cameron Steele. Fifth ball was a sort of a back foot punch. The sixth ball was a sort of a back foot punch. And the seventh ball, I've just written WTF. So, yes, it wasn't your typical blocking it out for the draw type innings. But, so we will give Miguel every chance to re-ingratiate himself with the Taunton faithful or not.
I thought he bowled all right. I thought he was slightly unlucky with the ball. I mean, I don't think you can really judge many bowlers on that pitch, any seam bowlers on that pitch. But I thought that he was quite... I mean, obviously, it was his bowling that Roy Burns was dropped in the morning session, wasn't it? And he kind of went past the outside edge a few times, which most of the bowlers weren't really doing that frequently. So, I think, lots to improve on for him, I'm sure. But I'd like to see him, here with the Duke's ball, running in before kind of, because he's batting as well, his average is pretty good,
he has been a decent nick in the South African first class competition, which we couldn't remember the name of last week and nobody's emailed me to tell me, so we're still going to call it the X.
And again, being fair, he did only get off a plane on Tuesday, so he's had a week now to net and practice,
but unless you're on a plane that is, you're sat next to a hypnotist that makes you forget,
the old expression, pictures as a thousand,
blame it for that. But I think you know,
the picture paints 1,000 words, then Ben's spot on. Craig's expression was about 10,000 words. It was, you know, the sum summed up was, and now I'm going to have to bowl and get a tonking here. But there was an awful lot of subplots in there, expression as well.
I mean,
yeah, but Craig was part of the problem, though, that mini collapse when he allowed Bashir to take 2 runs. You know, Bass ran it down to short fine leg, and they took 2. And I said at the time, why is he taking 2? You know, why doesn't Craig overstay?
He was out
LBW. I mean, it was just, there was communal brain fade. Well, twice in the game.
Speaking of brain fades, I had Lammers and Renshaw up as early season favourites for the Golden Apple for brain fade of the year. But I think we can close the book on it now and congratulate Miguel Pretorius on winning a Golden Apple and not even been a Somerset player for a week. I don't think anything's going to top that this season. Mm. And if it is, I either really want to see it or do not really want to see it.
No, so, I don't want to. I really don't want to see it.
So, yeah, I think we can close the book on that. Well, congratulations, Miguel Pretorius. Won a Golden Apple for Brain Fart of the Year for slightly ill-judged Hoik across the line against Cameron Steele. So well done. So it's going to make the Golden Apples a little bit shorter this year because I don't think anything is going to top that. What else have we got? I mean, I've written down here Gregory, solid, really solid game, really like his captaincy.
Brilliant.
I think it may be a little bit of a blessing in disguise that Abes is not around for these first two games, just so he can really get his leadership style and do sort of his presence over with the team. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
They're getting on really well together.
I just think maybe, you know, I mean,
I don't think there's any reason.
I think that's a little bit of a disservice to Abel because I think he would have been the perfect.
Yeah,
I mean,
he definitely.
You know, he's such a great guy as well as being a wonderful cricketer that I think he would have thought long and hard about how he was going to operate in that situation as well. You know, he would have been there if Lewis wanted to bounce anything off him, but he wouldn't be prompting. And let's not forget, Lewis has captained him in the T20s for quite a while now. So. Yeah. You know, it's not exactly new territory, is it? But no, Lewis is fabulous. You know, he's a very cerebral captain, isn't he? And you know, you can almost see when the sort of live stream goes to him, you almost see the brain working there. It's constantly calculating and looking at the options, which I really like.
It was funny because I've only seen Somerset live this year in the university pre-season game against Exeter. And when they were fielding, it's so different because normally Abel is, you know, clap, 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 and everything from first slip, and he's running up back and forth. I think Lewis was kind of sort of stood at first slip, being the general on the hill, surveying, arms folded, you know, sort of you knew he was thinking, but you know, he wasn't like it's a totally different style to Abes, who's.
They're not nearly as noisy. They were the noisiest side in the country under Tom Abel. They're not nearly as noisy now.
Be interesting to see when Abes is back.
They seem to feel just as well. Mm. You know, they seem to respond to Lewis's style of captaincy, just as they did to Tom's. You know, they look good in the field. They're very together. Play for each other, and I think
if Craig is captain at all this season, I think it's fair to say that Pretorius will be fine lay for left and right hander at both ends for about a 10-over spell. I think that'll be he'll get his revenge serve cold.
He's probably
going
to get demoted to 11 as well. Anyway, right,
Craig,
we have
Craig might be captain them against Notts.
Well, sure. I was just going to think about Notts. I mean, we're assuming that Abes is still on the sidelines
for Notts.
It's going to be rotation amongst the fast bowlers. Presumably Jake Ball will come back in. I hope they keep Casey Aldridge in the side. But I asked to interview Lewis Gregory after play on Monday, and Jason said, no, you can't talk to him. He's gone straight onto the treatment table, you know, because the overs he bowled and the hours he spent out in the middle, I think it takes a toll. So I'd be surprised if we see both Lewis Gregory and Craig Overton in the side for not. I think it'll be one or the other.
Well, you'd expect Craig will play after missing Canterbury.
Yeah.
Although he's coming back, so it's.
I don't know. But if there is to be rotation, then it doesn't seem to make much sense to rotate out your Cs.
No.
And Casey Aldridge, you know, is young and fit and strong and deserves another game. So I would have thought it's got to be one of Gregory or Overton.
Yep, I'd agree. A lad who's thrown his name in the hat with a few wickets up at Headingley in the last couple of days is young Alfie Ogbourne. If you haven't seen, it's on the kind of the MB play thing, so you can see the wickets, and a couple of the wickets he took were some pretty good balls.
Gorgeous deliveries,
I think he's definitely thrown his hat in the ring. Again, he's another one who looks a lot quicker. His control looks to have improved. He's another one who's an absolutely lovely lad. You know, he never stops smiling. I think he's a wonderful character. So I would potentially have him in the side ahead of Jake Ball.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, his left armour gives you that extra bit of variety. I mean, one criticism that was sort of levelled at the bowling attack that took to the field down at the St Lawrence ground was they were all right arm seamers of a similar speed. Or gives you that variation. If you potentially work with Gregory/Green, Overton, Aldridge, Ogbourne and Bashir, I think that is a pretty decent bowling attack. Josh Davies, is Josh fit?
Josh is fit. Yeah. So I know the squad. Josh Davies definitely fit.
The squad.
Jake Ball will be desperate to play against Notts, won't he?
Benny, can you just hold that bit of paper a bit closer to the camera? This is the thing. I think everybody thinks that, like, Ben tells us all the juicy gossip that's going on, and he's very tight-lipped.
But inscrutable smile is.
There might be some Notts fans listening to your podcast that goes out tonight, and you know they might alter their plans completely based on any embargoed information. So
they might do.
Quite right too, Ben.
I mean, unless it's
stay tight lipped.
Definitely. So I guess there's not a lot of point in you. I know who the squad is. I couldn't exactly say that such as. Sure, Dixon has had a great start to the season, but I think it's too early to be chopping and changing the batting order until Abel's back.
Andy Cleave on Twitter had what I thought was quite a good suggestion, which was to open with Andy Umeed and Renshaw.
He doesn't want to open, does he?
You could play Dixon down the order, try and give him a bit of confidence. Umeed's, what is he, 154 not out?
But again, that was batted at four, and Leach opened, and I checked, there were 12 overs to go, which is quite early for a night watchman. So, I mean, let's be up. The specialist batters they had in that team were young Archie Vaughan, who, by the way, check out the highlights on the NB play page, which is linked to, literally bats exactly like his dad. It's quite scary watching it. He's a carbon copy of his old man. And then we had a 2 and 3 of Jack Leach and old Ned Leonard, who Ned Leonard got 50, which was brilliant. Then Andy Mead, 154 not out, Green 66, George Thomas 6, his brother Josh 29, Finn Hill 3, and then Tom Roos 7 not out. If there was an opportunity for Andy Umeed to open, he would have done it.
I think they'll probably keep the batting the same for one more game.
Yeah, I think you're right. Banton again is another one. I think just looks to me like he's back with a handbrake on. Just needs to let himself trust his decision making. Yeah.
He played well at Canterbury. Put the handbrake off down at Canterbury.
Yeah.
And played like Tom Banton we know and love.
Yeah, just it's just that comparison to Joss Butler in the England Test team is Joss Butler is trying to bat like he thinks a first-class Red Bull batsman should bat, and I think Tom Banton is as well, rather than trying to bat like Tom Banton, who's got every single shot in the game.
My fuse is quite long on Tom Banton, as everyone knows, because I've said it on here and I've written about it, and I want him to be given the run well beyond these couple of games.
Yeah. Right, so Steve, are you making any changes then? I presume it's really only the bowling attack.
I would actually go Umi for contrary to what you've all said, I would go Umi for Dixon. I'd tell him he's got to open. And I would keep the rest of the batting line at the same. And then if our suppositions are right and Lewis is rested and Josh Davies fit, then he would come in for me. I've got a lot of convincing to do about Jake Ball at the moment. So if Jake Ball plays, he's going to have to take a lot of wickets in the next couple of games, I'm afraid. There's a parallel universe where I'd love to see Alfie Ogbonna in the side. But I think probably, you know, it's his first game for the twos. Let him keep doing it for the twos for a couple of weeks. He'll get his opportunity. And as I always say on here, is that the baseball saying is, if you think you've got enough pitching, sign another pitcher. The more quick bowling we've got options and are fit and firing, ready to go and competing for places, the better. So my only change would be Davey for Lewis. It means that Casey gets the opportunity to bat one higher in the order.
That's provided that Lewis isn't... If Lewis is wakes up Friday morning feeling $1 million, says, "Coach, I'm playing. Yeah, you're not dropping him, are you?
No. I should say caveat by saying if...
Yeah.
Our supposition is right. So my only point of difference from you guys is that I want to see Umid have a run opening in the first team.
I've got a feeling that ship has sailed though. That ship would have docked at Hampshire last year.
You might well, but then he had that stellar one day cup competition, and again it's confidence. And you know, it's clearly his injury that he's now come back from isn't hampering him too much. If he can bat pretty much all day for a big 100, so
yeah,
that's the point of twos. Part of the point of twos cricket, isn't it, to get people back into form, and you know, definitely, they're available. You know,
definitely another interesting
zing and whiz them down from Headingley and get them in the squad for tomorrow.
Another
the squad that only one of us knows what it is and won't say anything. So.
Another interesting takeaway from the twos. Good to see Sonny Baker back on the park. Only bowled five overs on the first day, but five overs, two maiders, none for 18. Good to see Sonny making his return to match fitness. And I don't think there's much else to talk about there. I mean, nobody's thinking about bringing Ned Leonard in to open or three after his 50. Is that just me?
Well, perhaps Jack Leach could come in at the top of the order. We haven't thought about that one.
Yeah, that could be it. Come September, Leach and Leonard striding out to open the batting as we chase that victory against Hampshire to clinch the county championship. Bloody hell, we've done 52 minutes, boys. It's flown by. News that is leaking. I don't think it's been officially announced. That is that Somerset have been successful in their bid to host a Tier 1 women's team. I presume Ben is going to be tight-lipped about that as well. So we'll wait for that to be officially announced. But if that is the case, then I think it's a great bit of work by the club to be successful in the bid for that. What else have I
written? It was in the Daily Telegraph today, so I think it's pretty much a done deal.
Don't really believe much that I read in the Daily Telegraph, to be honest. I was a bit of a middle-aged liberal, so we'll leave that there. But generally,
I think if Somerset fans are online at around midnight, we might get an update. So if you
Somerset
go to
Dan Kingdom won't sleep at all now, Ben, because of that.
So 001.
Is this the embargo? Not you just being particularly cruel and thinking you bastards are going to have to get up at midnight.
God, you could be such a twat if you wanted to, Ben, with all these announcements.
Yeah.
Somerset's loyal fan base. Hey, there's going to be an overseas signing
at 2 a.m. There's going to be an announcement. Yeah.
Set your alarms to 2:30 in the morning, guys.
Yeah. Well, the ECB
that'll teach you to complain about the Brian Rose gates being shut all the time.
One of my favourite ones was that the ECB announced the fixture list for a season at midnight one night. Back a fair few years ago, and just kind of everyone scratched their heads. Why are they announcing the fixtures at midnight? So everyone on the counties had to stay up until midnight to sort all the fixtures stuff out. And but yeah, this one's quite an important one. So yeah, 0001. If you're putting this podcast out tonight, Trim Machine in your
throat. Yeah, don't bother editing the thing. So yeah, it literally goes straight out. I'll stick the words was on the front, and off we go. Right, we've touched on it. This bloody Kookaburra ball, then. All games in the entire county championship were draws. Some possibly have lost a bit of time to the weather as a mitigator.
There were a couple they could have played till today and would still be in draws.
Yeah.
My phone is about to die, and I just want to say that I have a sneaking bit of sympathy for what Rob Key said. I think it...
I do as well.
It is encouraging spin bowlers, and it is making batting look a little bit easier. And when you see Tom Lavenby scoring 100 and Matt Renshaw, batting really nicely, rather than them struggling to avoid nicking off all the time.
Yeah.
It does, it's... there are two sides to this argument. I'm not saying it's the answer to all of English cricket's woes or anything like that, but I think it's worth thinking about and worth considering and worth extending the experiment.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at our game, wickets fell to Casey Aldridge, who's a big, tall, strapping, fast bowler, to a leg spinner and a slightly unorthodox off spinner for Surrey. It was actually quite a good game, which is a thrilling finish, which is probably more due to Miguel Pretorius's brain fart than anything else. But yeah, I can definitely see both sides decide whether April is the right time to be doing it. We said last week that Rob Key probably looking out of his office at Sam Northeast scoring 350 and Glamorgan racking up 700 or whatever it was might have thought, oh god, what have I done here? But for all the games that were thrillers like ours, there were plenty more that were absolute ridiculous games, like Warwickshire and Durham and Matty Potts getting 170 or whatever he ended up getting, 150, whatever it was, as a night watchman. So don't know what your thoughts are, guys, but I guess the photo that the club put out today of about 10 boxes of Duke's balls on the players' balcony was a pretty clear indication. Or I don't know, was that official policy, or was it just a happy coincidence that's what you took a picture of?
Who knows?
Steve, I mean, have you got anything to kind of add to the Kookaburra versus Dukes?
No, not really. I totally think Anthony's taken the words out of my mouth there, because that's exactly what I think. And ultimately, good sides will produce good games on good surfaces, and if it's a case of adapting and finding different ways to get out. But certainly I would rather see a game like we saw at the Oval than it be over at tea time on Sunday with no score above 200, which we saw far too often a few years ago at the start of the season. Fun as it is to see Craig taking 5 for 17 and Lewis 4 for 11 or something, bowling Kent out as they did that fourth that morning on a few years ago now. To me, it's much more entertaining. And I'm one of those nerds who, if our game finishes, I'll always find the next most exciting game, the next most exciting game. So the fact that we went deep into the last day for me is fantastic. So if that's going to be the way forward, I don't very often agree with much that Rob Key says, but I think he's not wide of the mark there.
Well, he was right getting Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes in charge, even if they have ruin James Drew's batting, which they probably haven't, but it's probably a rumour that's going
around. Conspiracy theory. I mean, they're up and running.
Yeah,
for
we
the
love
season,
them. We're up and running for 2024 with our conspiracy theories. Just one more thing on the Kookaburra and the Dukes. I think the ball is only one variable in a game of cricket. You've got the pitch, you've got the amount of grass that is on the pitch, the soil, the moisture, the overheads. There's all sorts of things that will contribute to, you know, how much the ball is doing and how much it's seaming or spinning or swinging or whatever. So I think maybe changing the ball in April is probably not the right thing to do, given that pitches don't seem to be massive green seams anymore. The drainage in the outfields just seem to suck the moisture out of the pitch, and you don't see these kind of really luscious green pitches that do everything.
They were
anymore.
Talking about that on the commentary on, I think it was on Sunday at the Oval, and saying that how much more water you have to put on the square at the Oval now because the drainage is, you know, it can stop raining and they virtually go if the covers come off, which certainly wasn't the case in my younger days at the County Grounds. You know, you probably write it off for the day if you had the amount of rain they're now playing within an hour. So yeah, but a lot of people say, don't they, when the Kookaburra gets used overseas, and it's a really good ball when it's on the abrasive surfaces. And we said this last week, let's play some Championship cricket in August. That might that might be a good time to use a Kookaburra ball.
Well, we've got two Championship games in August.
I know.
Yeah,
I know, because
and the next Kookaburra games are in September, I believe. So long time to wait for them to come back. It'd be a shame if they all got lost before then. We have had a couple of questions. Alex, I really like your question about why our batters aren't turning the hundreds into daddy hundreds. Done a graph as well. Have a look at that on Twitter. Remind us of that again next week, because we have just about run out of time. I can practically hear Gibbo's belly rumbling as we speak. Mike, last week we've got to give the museum a plug, which will be open all the way through the Notts game. And Mike asks, what has Dom Best done to his hair? I believe the Yorkshire social media is calling him Spin Shady. He's gone for a peroxide blonde dye job. Loads more questions about women's in Kookaburra. Kookaburra. Andy Umeed opening. Kookaburra. Kookaburra, women's Kookaburra.
That's it. I think I've exhausted the agenda.
We'll let Ben get back to another 4 hours of work before the 0001 arrives, and he can breathe easy on that.
Yeah,
one.
I've got to sit
I
there
presume till... the squad's 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, Ben?
Yeah, 2 o'clock tomorrow for the squad.
Have you not got it on your WhatsApp, Steve? I'll send it over.
No, I haven't looked. I've been concentrating what you guys have been saying, not looking at my phone.
Right. Well, that was a joke anyway. I'm
going to just say one thing for any other business, and that is, in my world, and those of you who know me, I won't say any more, but there was a very interesting thing going around in my network with a job referral today for, I'm going to say, a sporting franchise somewhere up the M5. And I obviously can't say any more for legal and whatever reasons, but I'll let people, if people know what I do for a day job and put that together, they might, if I hear anything and I can say anything, I'll put it on Twitter, but there might be something happening with a sporting franchise. And it was one I looked at and thought, I really wish I wasn't so busy.
A new franchise or a...
No, work. it's an existing franchise that needs the sort of help I provide in my day job.
Oh, what, like sex therapy?
No, that's the other Steve you talked to on Twitter.
Steve's an accountant, if you were wondering, dear listener. So, sporting franchise up the M5 is going bust.
I didn't say that. I can't possibly comment.
Well, I mean, it's quite a wide net, because everywhere is up the M5 from where we are, so you know.
Okay, not far, not that far up the M5 in relative terms. Then.
That far up the M5 in relative.
And it's not. I haven't got an embargo time on it, Ben. Otherwise, I would tell you.
Oh well, everybody knows Gloucester are going skint, but it might not even be that. So who knows?
Western Storm kick off their 2024 campaign on Saturday at Sophia Gardens in Cardiff. So yeah, good luck to Sophie Luff and from the team. Yeah, looking hopefully a good summer on the cards for Storm. Got a young squad still, but another year's worth of experience. So, yeah, should be exciting.
Australian superstar Amanda Jade Wellington is playing for the Storm this year. Who I keep having to remember is not from New Zealand with a name like Wellington.
Yeah, she played in the warm-up game. They played a warm-up game.
Yeah, Wormsley. I keep forgetting what it's called.
Yeah, she played in that and took a couple of wickets. So, yeah, it's... yeah, they kick off on Saturday. There'll be a live stream and bits and bobs for people to tune in for. So, yeah,
I forget who they were playing, but they were 220 for 13 in their 50 overs.
Yes.
And that was rain effect. Like, how do you work out the Duckworth Lewis if you're kind of playing with infinite wickets? I'm sure Dan will let us
I'm
know.
I'm sure the scorers week. Would have been delighted with that.
Well, that's the trouble when you've got the... like when Tom Banton came back in the Exeter game. Anyone on the book, you just write T. Banton in again. But obviously, if you're on play cricket or MB play or whatever, you're like, oh my God, how do I do this? I see we got the WinViz. What else is going on with live streaming, Ben? We're all up and running, ready to go. Usual superstar commentary team back in the chair.
Yeah, got Trigo, same seven. So yeah, Trigo Derby on Friday. Oh, yes. So.
Well, it's the Jake Ball Derby as well now, technically.
Jake Ball Derby, yeah. I think things are good. We'll find out when we turn it on. it should be all okay. Got three new camera operators in our media interns, so all raring to go. So yeah, looking forward to it.
And you're paying them, aren't you? Else Dan will get very upset. He's back on Twitter. He's back on Twitter now.
He's back on Twitter. Yeah,
Dan's been forgiven.
Fully paid and it's a really important job, so they are very, very good. But the standard of candidates this year was unbelievable, so they're really looking forward to it.
Great stuff. Right, well, I feel like we've done that. Hour's absolutely flown by, and flown by in a positive manner as well, which is quite unusual for
it's nice, warms the heart of the cockles, doesn't it?
I know, lots of positives to take, and take that on into Notts on Friday. Cricket at the County Ground is back. Can't wait. Catch you up next week. Ta-ra.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Yeah. Cheers, both. Cheers. Take care. See you over the game.